Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us. We welcome you to the show. Today is Wednesday, February the 25th, 2015. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored, delighted, and blessed that you've chosen to join us again today for another round of looking at, understanding, engaging in the ancient Aramaic technology of forgiveness. Our work is simple, powerful, and the focal point of it is that each of us is responsible for what's happening in our lives. And each of us creates the results that we see and that we produce in our world. And when we recognize that and really come into full conscious awareness that we set up the world we see and that we attract to us the things that we think come from outside of us, as we realize that, then all of a sudden, a whole different game starts to happen. We begin to truly function as human beings. We begin to truly function as those who are able to move beyond the dream world. And an interesting thing to understand in this work is that the world we see is a product of brain cells firing. And when brain cells fire, the mind creates images out of course, the information that comes into our experience, but then we add the content of our own minds to that experience. And the same world, or I should say, the same source dreams come from is the source of the world that we live in on a day-to-day basis. And as long as we believe that when we look between our ears at something, we're looking at something outside of us, then we're stuck in that dream world. Most people awaken in the morning and they have a whole series of vignettes of little movies or long movies that play out in their minds day after day after day. And, of course, when they do that, they say things like, why is this happening to me again? Because, gee, this happened yesterday and the day before. Why? Well, as long as we never deal with the content of our own minds, all our minds can do is replicate their content. I came across an interesting quote from Carl Jung earlier today. And he says this, and what a powerful piece of insight. He says, who looks outside dreams. And, of course, we'd have to put that word outside in quotes because we're really looking at the contents of our own minds, but who looks outside dreams, who looks inside awakens. When we start looking inside at the source of most of the information that shows up in as our reality structure, pretending to be that from the outside, and we begin to recognize what is false there. And our offering is that anything you carry around inside of you that is based in hostility and fear is based in falsity. It's a lie. So anytime that your mind is showing you a world that you feel justified being in hostility and fear about, you're looking at a world between your ears. You're replaying the content of your mind, projecting it into the experience that you're having. And as long as you believe that that's outside of you, then you live in that dream. When you start to collapse the dream and you actually move inside of yourself and start to clean up the hostility and fear-based content that comes from a thousand generations of insanity, and your mind starts to give you realities based in love instead, then what happens is you get to move beyond your dreams. And as you move beyond your dreams, who knows what you will discover? Albert Einstein once said, it is entirely possible that behind the perception of our senses, worlds are hidden of which we are unaware. Well, Albert, it isn't entirely possible. It's entirely true. But as long as we're stuck of a hostility or fear-based mind, we don't have access to those worlds. We don't have access to what real, true human life is about. And of course, we have a simple definition for a real, true human life. Hold the newborn child. There's the experience of human life. If you're not having one of those, then you have a problem. And should you choose to accept the assignment, your problem will be that of doing the inner work. Instead of trying to change the outside world, to recognize that all hostility and fear is an inside job, and as you free yourself from the hostility or fear inside of you, literally the tissue structure in which those energies are stored begin to rebuild themselves, begin to strengthen and heal. And as they strengthen and heal, we get to live in a whole different game, a whole different process. And that's the process we're opening to possibility, suggesting that people, as they step into doing their work and begin to free themselves of the insanity of their generations, that a whole different game gets to be played rather than living out of the dream world, rather than living out of the replay of the content of our minds. We get to play a whole different scenario out. And who knows what we will discover when we do that? And who knows what you will bring into the world? What if you open to look behind the dream, what you will bring into the world? What understanding will you bring? And I point my finger at doing your work, and most people want to look at the finger, want to gnaw on the finger. There was actually a neurophysiologist named Warren McCullough that said, don't bite my finger, look where I'm pointing. It's not a discussion about the content of the mind. It's a discussion about the tools that begin to change everything we see. And who knows what the possibilities will be when we open to really, truly doing our work, really, truly stepping beyond that which the world does not explain or actually even ignores is there. You know, when we have a, you know, we have a world called science, and many, many things that happen that science cannot explain. And so what science does is it pretends itself to be scientific and goes on pretending that those things don't exist, that those phenomena, because they don't fit into a preconceived notion, be ignored. Another quote I ran across of Jung: I shall not commit the fashionable stupidity of regarding everything I cannot explain as fraud. You look at how many people take the ancient teachings of Yeshua and call them a fraud because it doesn't fit into the worldview they've been given. And it's simply time for us to wake up to who we are. And as we collapse, which is what forgiveness reliably does, as we collapse the dream world based in generations and generations and generations of hostility and fear, then we get to step into what's actually going on. And we step into that, a whole different understanding, comprehension, experience will occur. And so we are here to support, to inspire, and to bring forward more and more people who, instead of living out of the preconceived notions, the preconditioned mind of the culture, drop their preconditions and actually experience what's there. You know, what did Einstein know? That, you know, he spoke about intuition, and his intuition was 90% of his work. His imagination. You know, Einstein, when he created the whole idea of the general theory of relativity, it was wartime. He had no lab to work in. He did everything he did in his mind. When you realize that a mind that is freed from its dream world, from its nightmares, from its hostility or its fear, all of a sudden is just fraught with possibility. And when we open to that possibility, then a new world emerges, a new capacity to perceive, a new way to experience is opened. And who knows who's the one that's going to open that space to transform the whole game for everyone on the planet. For everyone who's living out of a vicious, a violent, a fear-based mind, who knows if your work will be the critical mass that brings forward a new way of seeing. You really, truly live as who you are. And that's what we're here to support. To support you in recognizing your purpose and to really, truly live out of that purpose. It's not fantastical. It's not something from out in space. It's here and now, and every person is capable of it. However, most of us have been culturally programmed that, well, you're not capable of it because you're just ordinary. You're capable of bringing forward the next transformation that changes the world. When we walk past the illusions of the mind, you know, the magician takes advantage of the pre-programmed mind and creates illusions and the brain filled with those illusions. Oh yes, the ones without the magicians. The magicians of medicine who brainwash us with things. The magicians of religion that brainwash us with things. The magicians of politics that brainwash us with things. And who knows what the possibilities are? We see in history tastes of it, and then people try to explain it away or get rid of it, or make this one a God man that was the only one that's capable of such. Each of us is totally and completely equipped, should we choose to do our work, to become the one who creates the next huge opening in the way the world sees and exists. Colin Wilson, a British writer, wrote this. The real purpose of imagination is not to create fantasies, but to make us aware of other times and other places. When it actually happens, we realize that imagination is a totally inadequate word for this faculty that can lift us like a rocket out of the present moment and make us aware that we are, in some curious sense, citizens of eternity. Did your culture, did your family system, did your religious system, did your educational system tell you that you were a citizen of eternity, full of snatching something new out of eternity and bringing it into this world today? Forgiveness empowers each one of us to do that. And who knows what you're going to bring in. I'm excited to see it. How about you, Dr. Tim? Are you excited to see what's going to happen?
Absolutely. I get the benefit of doing it twice a week in the support group. I'm seeing things happen each week that without the benefit of my efforts and the collective efforts of the group, I would never see.
And the collective mind would prefer to push aside, to just live as, well, you know, these are our limits. This is the way it's supposed to be. A little hostility, a little fear, a little grief, a little rage. Never hurt anybody. It's a basic message of the culture. In fact, we're brainwashed. We're conditioned to believe that stuff is normal. And it is so insane. And to see the spaces where people gather and really, truly collapse those illusions in their minds and choose to do differently is most magnificent, isn't it?
It absolutely is. Had a chance to do it again last night. We watched the second hour of a 4-hour Why Is This Happening to Me Again. We had somebody who'd never been to a group before. We had another person who invited a couple other people, and one of them called me today and may attend the group on Thursday. So these are people who have been coming, you know, off and on for a period of a year or more. And even though they don't do that many individual worksheets by their own accounting, they see the power of them and they are benefiting from what they're hearing and learning and how it's affecting their lives, and they're starting to invite others. And so we had some wonderful questions about the process. We had an hour of listening to Dr. Michael Rice, and we had somebody who asked if she could do a worksheet because she had a very, very disturbing dream. She rated her upset on a scale of 0 to 10 at about 100. And she had a hard time speaking for the tears, so she briefly described the dream. And then in working through the worksheet process and holding love conscious, active, and present, and defining a goal, and then canceling the goal and asking to be shown a hidden part of her mind, she actually moved from an upset level of 100 to an upset level of maybe a 1. It was so dramatic that she didn't even feel the need to do any of the energy tapping that people were offering to support her in doing, and she was able to see clearly that the upset she had about this dream was related to a recurring dream she had in her 30s, and she's no longer 30 years old. And being able to see that helped her break out of the cycle of fearing that this might be a dream of predicting the future or letting her know that she was about to have a horrible event in her life. And it's just it's an amazing thing to see how time after time when people do the worksheet process, not every time, but time after time, people doing the worksheet process end up with very powerful shifts from upset to peace and acceptance and joy and loving feelings. So, again, I say I'm quite privileged to be able to participate in that group and have such wonderful people. We had 12, maybe 13 people plus me in the group last night up in Woodstock, Illinois. And I've already gotten a call from another person who's never been to a group before but may attend tomorrow's group on Thursday. So my gratitude to everyone who comes and participates and those who spread the word and for those who are listening on the show. If you haven't done it yet, I strongly encourage you to start your own group or find one to attend because it's a life-changing experience for me.
Yay, yay, and a good example of walking around in a waking dream, actually exactly what Carl Jung, that quote that I just read from Jung, that here based on a dream is someone who's living in their, what they call their normal lives in this state of such terror and trauma, all part of the dream, and that when we look inside and do our inner work, different game, different world, different process happens. Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. And isn't it amazing, Tim, how people can watch that happen and not carry on? You know, that we're so conditioned in our culture and so brainwashed to believe things are and have to be a certain way that even when we know it's possible to change it, that there's a refusal to do that and just carry on with the old realities and like being faithful to the good old family feeling instead of stopping and loving truth enough to say, you know, if I go back to the person who these beliefs are supposedly based in their words, the things I believe are totally in contradiction to the words that person spoke. You know, I'm thinking particularly of Yeshua. There's so many things that people who say they're following him say and think and believe and doctrinize and dogmatize as being absolute truth, and they're in total contradiction. And their minds are so conditioned through fear that they can't even question. You know, they look at a sentence that Yeshua said, and they look at the doctrine 2,000 years later, and they totally contradict, but they can't question it. Just like, nope. I don't love truth enough to question what I had beat into me as a kid. This is the way it is. It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. But it certainly makes for interesting times.
Well, and on the other side, I think that it's so heartwarming when people just keep showing up.
Yes.
And eventually something shifts in them and they do a worksheet after coming to the group for 6 months or 12 months and they have a breakthrough that is such a powerful shift that their life is never the same again.
Yeah. It's definitely cool to watch and be part of. And we're delighted for everybody who joins us here every day to support that understanding and bringing that forward into the world. It's really so very, very awesome. And if you happen to be in the South Florida area, we'll start on Sunday with 6 days of free workshops at Unity of Pompano. And then we'll be doing a mind shifter and still point breathing workshop, one workshop that when we travel we do charge a fee for. So that'll be a week from Saturday. But otherwise, this Sunday, from 1 to 5, why is this happening to me again? Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, 7 to 9:30. We'll be covering things from uncreating consciously to getting the stress you need to codependence to interdependence. And we'll do a whole series of workshops that will all be free, open workshops, 7 to 9:30 each evening. And if you'd like to get a flyer on those workshops, just go to our website, www.whyagain.org, and click on the link for schedules, and you'll be able to download a flyer. Print it off. You'll have all the details. We'd be delighted to have you come and join us. And we'll then be doing the next week. Jeannie will be doing the Healing the Whole Woman two-day retreat. And I understand, honey, that it's up to almost 50 people, and their limit is, what, 51? Are you mute challenged, Jeannie? Hello, Jeannie. How are you? Well, I guess we've lost her. In any event,
my phone was froze up and it wouldn't let me unmute.
I know how that goes.
The last email that I got from them, we had 46 registered, and we had room for 3 more. And they said, yeah, so I think counting me, it makes 50. And so anyway, they had, and I've talked to a couple of ladies just yesterday and today that said they were still exploring their options. And I'm like, you better explore quickly then, because there's only 3 slots left. So if anybody out there has been thinking about it or, you know, whatever, it's time to act and quit just thinking, because, like I said, there's only 3 slots available in it. So I'm real excited.
And I know
it's going to be fun.
And I think you've got 3 or 4 different conversations going on with people who are talking about it. So those thoughts are probably going to be gone pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Awesome. And so there's that option. Go ahead, sweetie. Talk a little bit about it.
I was just going to say, and then, I'm hoping, too, that the ladies that attend that, because, I mean, it's going to be packed. I've got 10 hours that I get to teach during the 27 hours. So I've got a lot. I was showing you the worksheets that I'm planning on putting in the schedule, and you kind of laughed and said, you got your work cut out for you. But,
yes.
I'm hoping with all that I'm cramming into that 10 hours that it'll generate interest, that they'll want to step, some of them anyway, and step into the 9-day in April.
Awesome. So April 17th starts a 9-day Healing the Whole Woman residential intensive in Orlando, and I'll concurrently be doing a 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again? So, and that will goes both of those workshops will be prelude to a 12-day teacher training. So anybody wants to boost their work to the next level, there's a place to take it and a place to go. And then before we leave South Florida, we'll be heading down to, we're heading into the prison next Thursday. We'll be doing the men's prison, or jail, actually, here in Broward County. We're doing the men's jail, the women's jail. Jeannie will be doing some of the Healing the Whole Woman work. And so we'll be going to jail next week. Hold the space for us. And usually when we go into this particular jail, we're working with 50 or 60 inmates. And so we just hold the space with us, if you would, for transformation there, and effective understanding of the tools and the support that we'll create for these folks as they move forward. They're usually people who are, the folks we get to work with when we go into this particular jail are usually people who are just about ready to get out and, you know, get back to their lives in the world. And so just hold a space for each of those folks there. Touched by here and are able to put the tools to work in their world. And then we've got one more series of events. We'll actually be doing a Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, Healing Through Relationships, did you hear what I think I said, and Codependence to Interdependence in Miami at UTC, all these initials, Universal Truth Center in Miami. Awesome group of folks. We've just had a blast working with them down there. We actually went to church on Sunday there, and it was just fabulous to be with that group of folks again, and just some really high-level folks really about doing their work and living transformation in their world. It's pretty sweet, pretty cool. So if you care to join us, all those will be free open workshops except for that one Saturday workshop next Saturday. with the Mind Shifters is Don't Blame Breathing, an all-day workshop. And you can get all the details for all of it on whyagain.org under the schedule. Anything else to share about all of that, sweetie?
No, I just, you know, it's real exciting to see that church come about, and she's supposed to get in touch with me. They have a women's retreat in November, and so she said that there's a good possibility they'll ask me to come down and do the women's retreat for them, and theirs is a 3 or 4 day, and I think it's in November. So it's just expanding out, and I'm thankful for the opportunity, and anyway, hope I get my voice totally back by then.
You're sounding pretty good.
Yeah, today's been better so far. So it's a good friend of ours put us onto a powerful strength oregano oil. And so I hope that that's kicking in here, plus all the other supplements and things that we've been doing. But anyway, we do have a caller with their hand up, and then some of the conversation in the chat room, and then I also got a text. Is been kept a little bit quiet, at least maybe it's just that I don't get into the news a lot or whatever, but that the Federal Communication Commission is putting before Congress a vote tomorrow having to do with what they call net neutrality. And I'm not sure if that's good, bad, or ugly, but because it's being kept quiet and everything, it seems like it's probably a little hidden agenda somewhere that the public's not known about. I don't know. So that's kind of been some of the conversation in the chat room. And also, like I said, I've been getting a couple texts about it. And so I don't know if you know any more on that. It was just kind of brought to my attention within the last day or two. So I don't know if that's because I've not gotten into the news a lot or not. But
I haven't heard anything recently. I know there was some movement afoot to try to basically set the net up to function in a hierarchical manner where if you're, you know, in the privileged group, you get higher speed, priority access, peons will get less. It's kind of an old game that the governments tend to play. It seems to be a coming thing. So,
right.
Less people speak.
All right, well, let's go to our caller. It's area code 417. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Hey, Jeannie, this is Julie.
Hi, Julie.
Yeah, welcome. How are you? Well, thank
Very
you.
Very good. How are you? Is your snow melting off?
It's melting. I'm outside, melting snow, taking a walk and getting a little bit of semi-sunshine. Anyway, my question is, what creates resistance when, you know, people know the agenda, know the tools, yet there's a resistance? Is there one thing or are there many things?
My take would be that there are probably many factors involved, you know, that resistance versus willingness thing. And probably the biggest factor in resistance is that people don't have the brain cells for the value of the alternative. You know, if I've lived in a family system and my parents and their parents and their parents, the family habit is, well, this is the way life is and this is the way the dream goes, so you just live with it. And if your dream's a nightmare, you just sort of, you know, suck it up and carry on. And someone presents to me the idea that, you know, that whole dream is false and can be changed, because there's such a mass of data based in the dream or the illusion, that mass, you know, it's kind of like that old definition of inertia, a body moving in a particular direction at a particular rate of speed will tend to continue to move in that direction at that rate of speed until it's acted upon by an outside force. Battleship in the middle of the ocean doesn't all of a sudden say, well, I think I'll turn around now. It takes miles to turn around because of that inertia, because of that movement in a particular direction. So if people are brought up in childhood with rage and guilt and grief and self-deprecation, and you're a sinner and you deserve hell and all the stuff that gets pounded into children today, if they grow up with that and they come from parents and parents and grandparents who hold those kinds of things, and they live in a community of people who hold all that to be true, even though it's all based in a fraud, then the mind will tend to continue to move in that direction at that rate of speed. And it doesn't turn or shift easily, just like the battleship. It takes time, and it takes the continuous building of brain cells for people to recognize the value of an alternative. That would be my take.
Okay, so then you're saying it's a value of the alternative. Is it also about loving truth, or is there nothing else involved with that?
Oh, I think loving truth is a major key in the process. Most people love their own opinions, and they're going to stick with their story no matter what. I mean, you look at scientists who see a piece of evidence that doesn't fit with what they believe, and they actually continue to call themselves scientists, although they totally discount what doesn't fit into their structure. They totally throw it away. And that's what people tend to do. And so if I don't love truth enough to actually let truth in to teach me, to guide me, then I'm going to tend to be stuck in that resistance mode, in that inertia. And, you know, as I build the brain cells for something new, you go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and he says his teaching was for those who had the eyes to see and the ears to hear. He was saying for those who have the brain cells to understand what I'm saying, they're going to be able to use these tools. But for those who don't have the brain cells, they're not going to be able to use the tools. So they're going to make up all kinds of stories. You know, the Greeks come along and translate Yeshua's words, and they pretend they've got the truth. And, you know, Yeshua would sit in most churches today and say, it's all Greek to me. And so with Greek brain cells trying to understand Aramaic teachings, it becomes pretty tough to do. So people make up so many things that fly directly in the face of what Yeshua taught. I mean, totally, completely opposite. And yet somehow they can conceive of that as true because they don't love the truth. They love their opinions, and they've been terrorized into believing even when what's believed is proven to be false. And so, you know, they're all factors that need to be dealt with to be freed from the insanity of the culture.
My observation of you when you've been in Heartland is there have been times where you have maybe sensed resistance or sensed unwillingness, and you don't give feedback. And then there are other times when you sense unwillingness and sense resistance, and you do give feedback. Where is a teacher's position to be an allower, allow life to support them or whatever, you know, their direction is, or to actually give feedback? Is this something that's intuitive?
Well, you know, there's that story that I tell about John the Baptist. And, you know, when someone's in blockage of truth, if you present truth to that mind, their stress is going to go up. And most people have their stress attached to, you know, an elevation in stress, attached to getting rid of the source of the information that does not fit with their current lie. And so they will attack. And so there are times when I'm working with people where, you know, the two skills you've heard me talk about, John the Baptist not having developed and why he lost his head, is he didn't know when to duck and when to hold the mirror up. And so in a teaching situation, if I feel like holding the mirror up to someone is going to be effective, that there's a space for that to be seen and heard, then I'll do it. And or if I feel like, you know, if my sense is too early for this one, I will lose my head if I bring this one forward, then I'll just breathe and pass on it and wait for another time. And so, you know, just listen to your intuition as to, you know, and sometimes I'll give the feedback even though the stress is up for somebody and they are going to attack. But my sense is that even though that will happen, that the resistance is ready to let go and the willingness is ready to step in. You might remember 2 years ago we had a gentleman there who had been to 2 or 3 intensives, and his major issue was anger, and he was still working with that anger issue. And there was someone else in the intensive who had an outburst of anger. And I had processed with that person. It was toward the end of a class, and so I processed with that person personally, and the fellow at the workshop was all in a fit of rage over, well, you didn't confront such and such on his anger. And, you know, we went back and forth 3 or 4 times, and I finally invited him to notice that he was willing to be in anger about somebody else, not, at least he didn't, wasn't aware of it, not having been confronted on their anger. And when I pointed that out, it was, he went from mode in anger into taking a breath. I don't remember if you remember this in class or not, but it was a very poignant moment for me. I just watched him take a breath and forgive his anger, literally, totally, and completely. Drop a level of rage that had run his life from the day I had met him, I'm sure a lot much longer, but that I was aware of. I had met him about 3 years earlier, and that came up and came up and came up, and he was processing and sharing stories about how this happened 5 and 20 and 30 years ago. But there was that moment, you know, he did go after my head a couple of times, but then finally when I said, well, you know, I'll just invite you to notice that you're willing to be enraged about someone else's anger not being confronted. Does that make sense? And he took a breath and he stopped, and there was a whole energetic shift for him. That was, you know, that was a moment where, in the classroom, live situation, my intuition said, keep going for it. Keep pushing the truth that's going to bring his stress up. And his stress cracked. And there's been such a transformation in this gentleman's voice and demeanor and situations in his life. Like, it was a whole moment of just huge transformation for him personally. And as I observe him when I have contact with him now, his demeanor is just like totally shifted from, you know, when I first met him. So I think intuition is a key that you really need to listen and know when to push the envelope and when to step back and just let somebody be in their model, you know, stew in their dream, their reality at that moment. And I have lost my head a few times, or at least had people attempt to take it off. You've seen it happen.
Yes, I do recall some of that. I think that's really good feedback about, you know, taking a look at, you know, the person who wants to share, you know. So the other thing is when I have gone to share something with I consider somebody to be in a sense of unwillingness, when they go into, rather than attack, but it starts off as a defensiveness, is that kind of a form of attack too, because they really seem to be caught?
Yeah, it's very common. There are all kinds of ways to take off somebody's head, to discount what they're saying. And, of course, what we invite someone who's in that stress mode to do is to receive the feedback that's coming in. You know, receiving feedback doesn't mean I need to believe it. But if I go into some sort of defense or resistance to even allowing it in, then I know that it's showing me a part of my mind that is in that disconnected space. And when I step into the willingness to collapse my resistance, collapse my hostility or fear, allow this piece of feedback or this piece of information in a neutral space, that I receive it so that I can look at it in an unbiased way. So if I let go of my resistance, then I can hold that information and look at it, and if it doesn't fit, I can still throw it away. You know, receiving it doesn't mean I have to believe it. But at least giving myself a chance to receive it, I can look at whether or not it might be true. And if it's true, then great, I move forward with it. If it's not, then I can still throw it out. But if I'm in resistance mode and somebody delivers the information and I'm not I'm not even going to let it in. You know, I'm so filled with my story and my conversation. And, you know, I've watched over the years. In fact, we created a worksheet for this one. We haven't used much lately, but, you know, there was one year there was someone who was on the support team that was just in so much resistance and had so many stories that I created a worksheet on the stories I've told. And somebody in this situation who's got their reality, their perception, their dream going on, and they're like, and this is so true because, and here's why it's true, and here's what happened. And then when they're shown that that's totally irrational and illogical and never happened, that story will collapse, and for those who have not done their inner work and are still stuck in the dream, they'll come up with another story. Maybe, but, I mean, I've watched people do the exact opposite story. They go to the opposite extreme. Well, the reason it happened is because of this. And then, when that story's proven to be totally false, no, that can't be true, they'll forget they told story number one. They'll forget they told story number two, and they'll tell story number three, and four, and five, and six. And that's the person that's committed to their lie. That's the person that's committed to blocking truth with their stories. And carbon-based memory just does that kind of as a matter of course. It's just automatic. And so if I step into it, that's why, you know, once you come out, once somebody comes out of their story, step number one of the worksheet, okay, here you go, tell us your story. And then the first words in step number two are, I choose to love truth. I'm willing to see the truth here rather than be stuck in this story. You remember when Joel was at Heartland, he wrote that song, Stuck in My Story, My Pain and My Glory. And so many people are so committed to their pain as what glorifies them. And are unwilling to just be with truth. And so it's a challenge to make that shift.
I remember one time awakening from a breath session here at Heartland, and as I was waking up, the sweet energy communicated to me that it was Julie, if you keep telling your story is just going to increase. You got to quit telling your story. There's something else to look at. So, you know, that saying, what we focus on increases has a lot of validity.
Yes,
anyway,
absolutely.
I appreciate your sharing. Appreciate your insight and appreciate your sharing.
All right, we appreciate you. Blessings.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Awesome. For those who don't know Julie, Julie's the author of Healing Children, Loving Children, and worked in an inner city school in Dayton, Ohio for many years before she retired and moved to Heartland, and just has done such enormous work with getting this to the level where kids can take it and use it and understand it and put it to work in their lives. It's pretty awesome what Julie has done and the contribution she's made to so many kids in her world. Thank you, Julie. So, Dini, anything else happening in the chat room?
We do have a hand up. Area code 517, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's Rex calling.
Well, hey there, Grandpa. How you been?
Opa.
Opa, Opa. I'll have to get used to that. That was not in my brain cells. Opa is not, I don't have those German brain cells yet, so I'll have to keep
the
remembering
grandpa,
that. Remind me.
The grandpa fits too, obviously. I'm doing well.
Yeah.
Baby's doing well. Nursing and everything is going really beautifully well, you know, as far as that goes. And things are happening in a fluid manner and, you know, there's a lot of adjustment to breastfeeding and the whole process. So it's all been going very well. It's been pretty amazing to be on the inside as much as I can and then, you know, watching things also from the peripheral. So, yes, it's incredible. I did,
awesome.
Thanks for asking. I did want to mention something that I've found with resistance that I find to be very beneficial. And I do this as a matter of, a foundational piece to teach, you know, when I'm working with people or when, and that I've learned working with myself. And that is to the degree of intensity of my resistance can be a really strong indicator as to the degree of the depth of the issue that I have the opportunity to clear. And,
good point.
And so that being said, what I find is that if a person hears that before resistance comes up, quite often it helps them move through the resistance with more willing, because it's kind of like the caveat that helps them move through it more simply and more directly.
Point. Hadn't thought of it that way. That's awesome.
Cool. Well, that was primarily what
I
wanted to share, and things are going well, and I haven't been on the program as much as I'd like, but I'm here today and enjoying the program.
Delighted. Glad to have you with us, and thanks for that insight and that piece of information. Let's see if Dr. Tim has anything to share. Although I suspect that Dr. Tim has never experienced resistance or seen anybody in his practice with resistance, right, Tim?
Well, what Rex just said is just verbatim out of one of Guy Finley's lectures, or several of them. He says that, you know, the degree of my resistance to an unwanted moment is directly proportional to the importance of the lesson in that moment for me. And then he goes on to say that resistance is the lesson stealer. I cannot learn from any person or situation unless I put myself in a subordinate position to them. And I go in with the assumption that what I think I already know is only partially true, or perhaps even completely false. And if I can't take that position when I go into a new situation or an interaction with someone, I'm going to leave knowing what I think I know. And there's no possibility for learning.
Yeah, there's a great line in the Course in Miracles that says, you cannot be shown something that you refuse to look at.
Yeah, it's one of those wonderful things about the system that the Creator gave us, that we have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of our conscious awareness in each moment. And,
yes.
And if I choose to focus on what I already know to the exclusion of any potentially new learning, then I get to create my reality that way.
I think that, many people refer to me as a teacher often, and it's like, no, actually, I'm an eternal student. I am here in this moment always willing to be fed and taught, and, 20 times a day, 50 times a day, I say, Rukka, teach me what this is about. Show me how to really comprehend this in a true form. And I find that the more willingness I have to sincerely make that request, the more the teaching just comes in, and, I get to see things and be shown things that I could not otherwise possibly even start to comprehend. And so I think being an eternal student is really a big key in the game. You recognize, we're looking through this 9-bit perceptual system at a perhaps 20 trillion bit world, and who knows what's beyond that. The willingness to have it come in and teach me is huge, huge, huge every day, every minute of every day. Even the simplest things, and I'm sure I know all about it. Rukka, show me more about this. What don't I know here? What do I need to learn here? It's a powerful place to be, at least I'll offer that it has been for me.
And Michael, that part you're sharing right now is so important, because for me, having worked at it and continuing to work it, and it's a great reminder to just ask, what am I seeing here? Rather than trusting my carbon-based mind to tell me what I'm seeing, I go to my divine part, Rukka, the essence of truth, the essence of love, and say, just like what you're doing. And I have seen so many times that I knew what was happening. I was absolutely certain what was going on. And I knew what I was seeing was true. And then when I asked the question, it was like, or not. And it's so profound. And I would encourage everyone to just practice that, because it also resonated in me that it's what I was as a little child, as an infant, when I would just explore life. I had, you know, the desire and the willingness to just be wide open to learn, rather than the all the judgments and the different things that I put in place. It's pretty remarkable. And asking that question is really right on line with knowing that. Are we hearing a little baby right now?
I hear it.
I'm not hearing it.
I can hear it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Timing. So, yes, and Tim, that's cool. I didn't know. I haven't studied a lot of Guy Finley, but, boy, I'll tell you that recognizing the resistance as a potential opening to an issue is so, I mean, we know that in an obvious level, but how much resistance has helped me working with people of just being patient, you know, recognizing the more they seem to be resisting what I'm sharing or my invitations to heal, then the bigger the issue is there and the more they have to gain. And it just seems to bolster my patience working with them as well and myself in the same manner.
Lao Tzu has a pretty cool quote. This goes back to the 4th century BCE. And what he says is that what is yearly and tender belongs to the realm of life, and what is hard and strong belongs to the realm of death. And we get into this hard attitude, and we know that that's resistance, and it creates death. It's just, it doesn't work. And, you know, we want to try to block out information that doesn't fit with things as we understand them. And actually, there's an Irish philosopher who said that it is both fatal and cowardly to blink facts because they're not to our taste. And so that willingness to be soft and pliable and open and receive, you know, all that the universe has to input to us is what opens the space for us to receive all that the universe has to give to us.
Well, thank you, everyone. I'm looking at the clock here. You got 3 more minutes or so, and maybe there's another call you might be able to catch. I'll go back on mute. Blessings, everyone.
Okay. Thanks, Rex. So we're down to just, actually a minute and a half or so. And so we'll invite you to bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. We'll invite you once again to join us Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of this coming week at Unity in Pompano, where we'll be doing a series of workshops. And we'll suggest that you bring a stranger to the show with you tomorrow. Introduce somebody to this work, somebody who's never heard of such a thing before. And, you know, there are people that, of course, we get to meet people all the time in the world that are new to this work. And, you know, a day, a week, a month, 6 months, 2 years later, they're just like, I just can't imagine how I lived before I had this information and this understanding. And so give that gift to people, invite them to the show. And another awesome gift to give the world is to commit yourself to creating the best year yet of your eternal life. It's one of the best gifts you can possibly give. We appreciate you for being here. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.